This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Elgium Talks, when we're going to treat you to a segment from our recent conference for DB and DC clients. You'll hear Nick Stansbury, our head of commodity research, offer a powerful analysis of the risks and opportunities posed by climate change and the energy transition.
Over the past year or so, I've had the opportunity to talk with some, but by no means all of you, about some of the work that we've been doing around climate change analytics, building out a suite of capabilities internally to try to understand the process of change that lies ahead. And I think I've been asked one question more often than any other. Alongside the engagement that you, Elgium, are doing on my behalf that we've heard so much about earlier on, what can I as a scheme, or what can we as a scheme actually do? And that is precisely the question that I want to try and tackle this afternoon, to run through, as we see it, the strategic choices that are ahead of you, and to talk to you about what we can do to try to help you think through the implications of those choices and putting them into practice. So what can you do? Well, we think there are not one, but a spectrum of possible opportunities or possible choices ahead of you. But before we dive into those, I want to just revisit one really important question. And the question's this: why is it that we feel so strongly that this question of climate change and climate change risk management sits within the domain professionally of us as investors, rather than sitting just inside the sort of personal domains of our lives that we care about so greatly? Well, the answer to that question, I typically answer through the lens of two really big numbers. The first of those numbers is the number 10. And some of you will have heard me use this number many times before, $10 trillion. That's how much the global listed energy sector has of investors' capital worldwide invested in it. $10 trillion worth of invested capital that sits at risk in just the most vulnerable place for the energy transition. The scale of the risks and the scale of the capital that is employed here tell us that this is an issue that matters to us from a risk management perspective. The second big number is also trillions. It's 30 trillion. And that is because climate change, stopping the climate crisis, is at its heart a crisis of capital allocation. We have to get something like $30 trillion of incremental capital deployed into the new clean low carbon energy system of the future over the next 30 years. Where is that capital going to come from? Well, it has to come in large part from capital markets. And that means our decisions, how we choose to allocate capital today, is going to have a real impact on the type of energy system that gets built, and therefore the climate outcome that the world ends up with. So with that laid down as our groundwork, what are the decisions that we have to take over capital allocation? What are those decisions that lie ahead? What are our options? Well, I want to start with this first slide, because the first option that we have ahead of us is what we call the ostrich strategy. The ostrich strategy. We all know that trouble lies ahead. That trouble is scary, uncertain, and hopefully a reasonably long way in the future. There are legitimate reasons why you might want to adopt this sort of a strategic response. Understanding that there are risks that lie ahead, but leave dealing with those risks to my underlying managers. These risks do require a different sort of analytical lens for us to look through at. It's a lens that we're not familiar with using. We can't look at the past. We can't do and use our typical financial tools, things like back testing, to try and work out what strategies will and won't work. That's because in this case, when we think about the climate crisis and the energy transition, there isn't a history that we can use to guide us about the future. We can't look back at history and calibrate our models and our decision-making frameworks around it because we have no history to work with. So those are some of the reasons why we think so many people adopt this kind of ostrich approach. But what do we think about it? What do we think about the ostrich approach? Well, there are two obvious investment implications. Investment implication number one is the positive one, which is that your diversification opportunities are maximized. In other words, by ignoring climate factors in strategic investment and capital allocation decisions, you will invest in anything just as you would otherwise have been able to do. Diversification benefits are maximized. But there is a downside consequence too, which is the risk, the carbon externality, we do not feel is properly priced in capital markets today, which means that over the next decade, when the important decisions and changes have to be made, that risk factor is going to get internalized into capital allocation pricing. That means a real and probably quite large negative return drag to those investors who choose to ignore the implications of that internalization of the cost of carbon. So, whilst I don't want to give you advice, what do we think of the merits of the ostrich approach? Well, we think actually you should look to the ostrich for the answer, because rather like fortune cookies, which don't come from China, ostriches don't actually stick their head in the sand to ignore danger. It's an urban myth. And we think most of the merits of the ostrich strategy should be treated the same way. We don't think a rational investor should adopt this approach. At the other end of the spectrum is what we think of as the extinction approach, which is also an approach which has merit, which is to say the climate crisis is so absolutely enormous. It is such a huge challenge and problem that actually it should dominate everything. We should completely ignore all of the other considerations and just focus on this one. In fact, we should focus on it so exclusively that we should be prepared even to sacrifice potentially significant units of investment return for any given quantity of risk. I sacrifice risk-adjusted returns if that delivers a positive climate impact. While such a position is intrinsically attractive to many people, it comes for most investors with fiduciary duties with significant problems. Adopting that position is very challenging for most investors. And therefore, we're looking, we think strategically, for middle ground between those two extremes. And what I want to talk to you about in the time that I have left is three distinct points on this climate spectrum of strategic decisions, looking at three very distinct approaches you can take, what they mean, and how we can help you take them. The first is one that many of you will be familiar with. It is carbon footprinting. Many of you may already do this, measure the carbon footprint of your portfolio and potentially set targets around it. Carbon footprinting is undoubtedly a step in the right direction. We know that carbon intensity and carbon risks are correlated. If you measure your carbon footprint, you are taking steps to start measuring that climate risk. If you set targets around carbon footprinting, you are setting targets that we know are likely to be correlated with reducing that climate risk. But that correlation is far from perfect. We know that two equivalent companies, both with equivalent carbon intensities, may be exposed to very different and different sizes of climate risk. We also know that carbon footprint, measures of carbon intensity, don't actually mean anything as numbers in an objective sense. Whilst you can measure a carbon footprint objectively, what does 1 million tons of CO2 per million dollars invested mean? Either on its own or relative to another number, it is not a metric that objectively is very useful. So we think there are two other metrics and strategic positions you can take. The first is what we call a risk mitigated approach. Putting a price on the climate risk you are running in your portfolio, internalizing that risk and making strategic asset allocation and intra-asset class allocation decisions as a consequence. Putting a price on climate risk, though, is likely to lead you to some potentially surprising investment decisions. You may, in fact, as we move on to the next slide, end up investing in some things that look a bit like this. If all you're concerned about is the risk and return implications of integrating climate risk, it may turn out that there are a large number of legacy fossil fuel type investments you can make that even when you stress test them for extreme energy transition pathways and climate outcomes, look like they may turn out to still be acceptable investments. For example, you may turn to the Middle East and end up building or financing the construction of new fossil fuel investments there, infrastructure there. Those investments, we can intrinsically know that making these investments is not a Paris-aligned thing to do. We are not making a Paris-consistent energy system more likely by financing these sorts of projects. Which is why, as we move on, we can see that there's another position you can take that moves further to the right, which is to say, without sacrificing risk-adjusted returns, can I align my own scheme with the Paris objectives? Can I move myself into a position where I am looking to preferentially allocate capital to those companies and countries that are they themselves aligning their own business practices, that are reducing their own carbon footprints at a pace that is rapid enough that their outcome, expected outcome, is going to be a carbon intensity that is consistent with the Paris objectives. But measuring these things is hard. It's really exciting for me, and hopefully for you, that by the first quarter of next year, we are going to be in a position to measure for any of our clients, both the climate risk and also the climate alignment of all of their assets in the scheme.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.